you actually hate grade cricket.
Hello and welcome to the Grade Cricketer Podcast. On today's show, Marlon Samuel sprays some 6 7th power into the air and films himself hitting Shane Warne for boundaries. So we question who the worst bloke in the entire world is. In other IPL news, number 333, Chris Gayle throws his bat on 99 and gives Jofra Archer a low five in an act of wonderful sportsmanship. Cameron Green's mythology continues, but is he the tall runs we want, or is Wilbekowski the prodigal runs we need to make us feel safe in the days of surgical masks and pandemic runs? There's Stark Mancads, Copeland Fifers, record-breaking partnerships, updated schedules, and Sydney La Nina rain. Meg Lanning is on the show to tell us how much better at cricket she is than all of us, offering Elise Perry, having Bradman records, and never losing ever again. Hashtag RCDC involves seeing TDC on YouTube, being the cricketer in the group, and having a South African World Cup winning newborn. This episode is brought to you by Budgie Smuggler, where you can get your customized bucket hats amongst many other things using the code CHAMP at checkout for free shipping. That's budgiesmuggler.com. And also Pezzy Lad Manscaped, who are offering 20% off your purchase using the code TDC at checkout. Really excited to be talking about the Weed Whacker a little bit later on in the show. You can also check out exclusive content every single week at patreon.com/gradecricketer. More exclusive content every single week. My name is Ian Higgins and I'm joined by Sam Perry, Pezzy Lad. Welcome to November. It's the day before the US election. It's the day before the rest of our lives. And welcome to this show.
Thank you, mate.
The 134th episode of the Grade Cricketer Podcast, which started as a Twitter stream, but playing cricket at the grade level.
And Melbourne's open.
It's open.
We say Melbourne's open, and commiserations and thoughts to those in the UK, where your country is closed.
Yeah.
That sucks. Yeah. Genuinely, on a sincere note.
Well, it started off as 4 weeks, and it's probably going to be longer than that. I'm not going to lie to you guys. Depending what, I don't know what it means
your
culturally.
Daily Mail.
Yeah, looking at the Daily Mail stuff. Yeah,
how much you got that leaked.
Right, looking at it right now, yeah. There's some fashion stuff going on here as well. Pez, the first question of this week, something I picked up on My Cricket's Instagram. And the caption is, it's a photo of father and son who put on 224-wicket partnership for the fourth wicket. And the caption is, this is brilliant. A 224-run fourth wicket partnership between father and son, Will and Mick Day. Will finished on 95 not out. Mick, 118 not out for Coolum Cricket Club. Now, is this a nice moment, Pez, or is this a complete offering by Dad?
And it can only be one or
it's
the other.
It's binary, mate. It's one of the two. There is no third door.
I didn't even need to say that. I love the picture. Have a look at it if you do have the capacity to go online. Dad standing just closer to the camera. Then son. Son's kind of shoulder slumped a little bit. Dad's sweaty. He's got a bit of chest on him as well.
Mm-hmm.
Now, look, many people will take one glance at this, he goes, and say, isn't that fantastic? Father, son, like, it's a moment for the father and the son to savour.
Would they be wrong in suggesting that, Sam?
Well, hear me out.
Okay.
If someone had ever told me that I'd get to do something like that with one or both of my sons, doing it with both of them at the same time would be strange because one would be the runner.
Might be the runner,
That's therapy.
It's communication.
That's at least a decade of therapy there. Well, I get emotional thinking about that. But in relation to this partnership, there's an elephant in the room, isn't there, when you look at the scores? Mm-hmm. There's an elephant in the room.
Where's mum?
Like, imagine, so they've had this partnership, and imagine this, like, this creates lifelong memories. There'll be all sorts of scenes of reminiscences of this.
Yes.
Around the dinner table at Christmas.
Yes.
30ths.
Yeah.
Dad's weddings. 60ths. Weddings. Yeah. Funerals.
Bar mitzvahs.
Even. And the dad.
Funerals.
The dad is good. Well, it is. I'll never forget the time
Dad and I put on 224 for the fourth wicket.
You look at the picture, everything about it is perfect. Mm-hmm. From both of them standing there to even the bloke in a hoodie behind them looking to get some smokes or something like that. Over the top of a corrugated iron roof from what it looks like here.
Yeah.
And but then you just see the score. You see the scores. You're like, oh, Will made 95 not out. And you sort of think, how'd that happen?
Yeah.
Dad's 118.
Yeah, so there's enough runs.
Has Will caught up at the end? Okay, that's okay. Or has Dad gone, I actually want to make this a daddy?
Yeah. put the foot down.
Yeah, it was like, did Will have a chance to hit a two, kick the strike? Yeah. Was he farming the strike? Oh, it just leaves a lot of questions. And because of the scorecard, this is cricket.
Mm-hmm.
It will be frozen in time.
Yes.
We'll never know. We'll can invent narratives around it. Yeah. So, like, it's all, you know, this is the season of the asterisk with the pandemic.
Great point.
And that's, I know they're both not out, but there's always going to be an asterisk with that partnership.
There will be.
What happened?
Yeah.
What happened?
We'll never know. Well, either Will or Mick Day may listen to this show. Perhaps both. Perhaps someone at the Coolum Cricket Club will find out and they can write into us.
Oh, look, if they're up for it, we'd be happy to chat with them both. I'd love to interview them both at the same time.
It doesn't even be in the show, to be honest. Just privately have a chat with them.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh, gosh, there's so many questions.
True. We'll give you a number.
So many questions. Now, Pez, this has been a long winter season. Now it's coming to the summer months down here, down under, as some might say. And we're going to take a little bit of a break for a couple of weeks just to recharge the batteries before the summer starts. And it's because we've been following the IPL so closely that it's like, it's been so,
I just want to watch the IPL.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's been very difficult to just immerse myself so deeply into it that it's just like, I need a little rest.
Yep.
But in all seriousness, we are going to take a couple of weeks off after this show. And then we're going to come back on the 23rd of November, just a couple of weeks and the summer starts. Big summer.
Yeah.
Big summer.
Ahead of the first men's T20 against India and all that sort of gear. Yeah, it's because it's an enormous summer. There's a tremendous amount of content coming your way. We need to refresh. We've sort of done it a few times now. And, we just want to have a bit of a spell, so to speak.
If you are a Patreon subscriber or if you want to sign up, then we're going to be continuing on the Patreon right later.
Oh, that carries on.
That carries on.
Oh, those guys still get content.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Right, okay, let's get into the real stuff here, mate.
Okay.
And I'm not talking about how tall Cameron Green is, actually.
Which we will get to.
I do want to get into that because it's very confusing.
Yeah.
Now, let's talk about the main cricket story of the week, Ben Stokes versus Marlon Samuels. Now, this is I'll just give you the sequence. The sequence, and then most people have listened to the show, given by the amount of DMs, so people have written in. There's been a couple of eyeball stuff going on.
Yeah, yeah.
So Ben Stokes was quarantining for 14 days and he was saying on his Instagram that it was so grim and he would never wish it on his worst enemy. And then someone else wrote in saying like, oh, what, even Marlon Samuels? And he was like, even Marlon, I wouldn't even wish it on him. Then Samuels has sort of turned that. He's gone from 0 to 100 real quick on that. And he's saying that he wrote this whole thing. I'm not going to quote it word for word, but he's basically saying he was going to turn his wife Jamaican in 14 seconds. The next day, Stokes then posts 10 photos without any context of Marlon Samuels on his Instagram story. This is the most 2020 thing ever. Then Shane Warne gets involved, obviously, and Warne gets involved and he says, just because you're an ordinary cricketer doesn't mean you have to be an ordinary person, which is actually a lesson that all of us can learn here on the show. Samuels then goes and films himself watching on YouTube on his phone, hitting Warne for 3 boundaries in an over. I don't know if you saw this, Pez.
Obvious reply.
And he's... So I actually hadn't seen this until someone sent it into us, and I thank them very much for doing that. But it was like, so Samuels was then commentating. He's watching like on an iPad, I think it is, or on another phone. Samuels hit Warne for 3 fours in an over at the MCG in an ODI in like maybe early 2000s or something, whenever that was. And he's like, is this the great Shane Warne? Bam, over cover, man. I was just like, is it the great Shane Warne? Cannot be. Doing and then someone then sent him a DM saying your cologne is awesome, really looking forward to, which is what this sextillion seventh power is. Then Marlon Samuels, after this nice message, someone DM said, your cologne is awesome, thanks so much for it. And he said, sextillion seventh power, told you it would work, ladies falling over you, I'm only interested in sevensomes now. Now, Pez, it's my grandma's 90th birthday today, of which I now remember that I need to call her. But when I do that, my first thing will say to you, fuck, Marlon Samuels is a bit of a cunt, isn't he?
Well.
But it's funny.
Well.
But I don't think he's very self-aware. I mean, the thing you wrote to Stokes, I mean, fucking hell, what an absolute cunt. I'm sorry. So that's something that was just fucking, whoa. Whoa.
Well, you know.
Thoughts?
Well, my first thought is that this is one of the great exchanges, you know, in world cricket. It's Stokes v. Samuels v. Warne.
Yeah.
That's a triad.
It was the triad I didn't know I needed.
Exactly. And we went the big fish this week. we went the enormous fish this week, and I ain't talking about Warne or Stokes. I might get this up on Insta. We invited Marlon Samuels onto the show. Obviously, you can see that he's not joined the show.
Not yet.
But we got close.
Yeah.
I wrote to him.
He replied.
Oh, you replied? Yeah. Did I write to him? I've got there's a lot of texts from me now there.
Yeah.
I said, Sextillion, we are the biggest podcast in world cricket. I just sort of, we don't talk about ourselves like that, but no. I thought, you know, this is his style. We have to
Go to flex.
So we'll call him Sextillion.
Yeah.
You know, would you chat to us on Monday, 10 minutes? The people need to hear from you. Is that wrong? I said Curtly was on last week, calling him Curtly. Just to try to give him a sense, you know, this is the, these are the levels we're operating
blue
at.
Tick. Yeah, it's
blue tick. Love to know what you think. Respect, Sam.
Yeah.
Thumbs up, little thumbs up emoji.
Yeah. What do you say?
You want to be the biggest, that's what you mean. And I was thinking... He's picked up the bit where I've said we're the biggest. Who does he think is the biggest? Maybe Lawler and Gideon's new cast coming
point.
Out. Yeah,
yeah.
Actually. So with respect.
Yeah.
To them. So and then there's a lot of blue messages from me with a lot of scenes underneath.
Yeah. Well, we got a reply and we thought, well, we're on here.
Reply.
We're on here.
Okay, what would it take, Marlon? We can promote anything you want. Would have been so good. You don't know how many people in Australia are desperate to hear about Sextillion's seventh power.
I am desperate to hear about it.
Really, I'm fucking desperate to know about it. Anyway, but and the other thing I picked up from this was like, you know, was Warnie, the great white whale.
Yeah.
King, can't stay mad at you, baby. But
that's right.
You know, that just that line. Like, you know, Samuels and Stokes brought a very 21st century kind of like...
Beef.
Style, flavour to their beef. Warne brought the 19th century flavour, which was like ordinary cricketer, ordinary bloke.
Yeah.
And like, isn't that just the, like, it's like the cricketer's lowest thing they can say to somebody. Mm. You were shit at cricket.
Yeah.
You know, you were shit at cricket. It's like, same as has seven test tons.
Yeah.
Seven test hundreds.
Yeah.
Shit bloke, shit cricketer.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You weren't amazing at the thing that I committed my entire life to that I had a genetic gift for.
Oh, you called me shit cricketer. And then he says, get well, son. That's the dagger from
Warne. get well, son.
Get well, son.
You're not well. He's not well.
Yeah. Who?
Well, everyone in that tie correspondence, to be honest. I think Stokes is someone come out and looks amazing.
Yeah, he does. Yeah.
When he posted 10 photos of Samuels in a row, none of them were bad photos. Like one of them, he scored 100 in ODI. I put that photo up. No context to it. Brilliant. Just fucking. But it is interesting when you think about
it. It's got a real stalker kind of vibe to it.
It did a little bit, actually, now you say that. You remember when Ron Artest changed his name to Meta World Peace?
Yeah, I think
that's
that. Yeah.
I think that's what Samuels is going for here. He's changed his name to Sextillionth Seventh Power.
And what would that mean for your relationship to him if you did that?
Well, if he's only interested in sevensons now, find the connection that I can have with Marlon Samuels. Yeah. That's too many people in a room. Seven.
Is it?
Plus one. Eight.
Is it?
Trust me, mate.
That's right.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, trust me. Yeah.
Nice.
You don't get into the podcast game of that and picking up a couple of things on the way, mate. Picking up a couple of things on the way. STIs I'm talking about now. Remember when Warne got involved because there's obviously the famous scene during a Big Bash game. Warne was like, you're like pulling on shirts, Marlon, and that whole thing was sort of kicked
fuck
off.
Fuck you, Marlon.
Fuck you, Marlon. Yeah, all that stuff. And it's interesting because Warne
had a really shiny face when he was doing that.
He got into the shiny face stuff. That was shiny face Warne.
Of sweat there that night too.
That's
the light
right.
Bouncing off him.
Yeah, that was La Nina as well. just a wick of sweat dapped across his face. Yes, across his brow. For all of his flaws, which he didn't have many on a cricket field, but he would never sledge. He had a lot of respect for players. I think the only time he really went after people was Darren Cullinan and
Darryl.
So what did I say, Darren?
Darren.
Well, that was his brother.
Yeah.
So now I'm doing the Curtly Ambrose thing. Which club was that? That took 115 wickets at? And poor Collingwood during the Ashes. But he had a bit of a beef with that. But like he does respect players. I feel like he does. And he was well liked by players. But so when Warne goes at someone like that, it's a bit like, oh, no, Samuels had some stuff going on. And Stokes doesn't really go at players either, does he really? You know, outside the pub, sure. But apart from... You know, I just think that there's obviously some stuff going on there where Samuels, it's been revealed that he's not very popular in the cricketing fraternity, which is surprising.
There's something about Marlon. But then again, Stokes and Warne going after him, I don't think that necessarily means to me that like, oh, well, we know who the goodies and the baddies are here.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, maybe necessarily.
Warne, maybe Warne's off that Red Bull money.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
And covering the IPL fully now.
Yes, as we do.
And Joffre Archer got Chris Gayle out for 99. Chris Gayle is obviously where his shirt number is 333, the most yuck thing in the entire world. Mm. And what does Chris Gayle do, Sam?
Well, he threw his bat on the ground like I did in under 12s. So I nicked it and said I didn't.
We all heard it, mate.
He didn't kick it all the way off like me. Related to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and then I noticed after that, obviously they low-fived Chris Gayle and Jofra Archer.
Respect, yeah.
Archer later said in one of these internal social media pieces, because there's no journos at the IPL and stuff anymore,
a
little window into the future, said he had he was asked who his fast bowling heroes were. He said, "No, I've got no fast bowling heroes."
Fuck me. Who did he like? Solomon Ben to the office.
No one.
Yeah.
Creates his own mountains.
We should have asked Curly who his heroes were, basketballers and footballers, because he just didn't like cricket.
Well, that's like Christian Vieri, the Inter Milan striker, who said his hero was Alan Border.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. Well, I can see
unveiled
that.
For Inter.
I can see that's VP. Yeah. Who was his hero?
Alan Border, AB.
Captain Grumpy, they
just
called him.
Just dogged.
Yeah. Well, it's a nice one. Now, do you think Grail meant to throw the bat?
Oh, I see. Look, I just want to say yes for narrative. I see what you mean. There was a bit of a slippage there. But, I would have been good. I'm not a fan of people throwing bats or anything, but somehow with the IPL, it's just such a circus. It's funny.
Yeah.
Just little things like that. Little things like that creeping in.
I still can't cop Gale. I'm not a
No, bad. I don't think I'm he's cool. No. I don't like Universe Boss. I mean, if we're being serious about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because when he threw his bat, then he obviously gathered all his possessions and thoughts, hopefully, as well. And he did the thing where he puts it's what Stornis started to do last year. He started to put the helmet on top of
the bat
bat and then lift it up like it was a human.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. Yeah. It's just not for me, that stuff. Much. It's a little bit much. But, I'm a white guy with a podcast. What do I know?
Good point.
Now, Pez, Cameron Green, how tall is he?
Cummins got Smith out again.
Oh, okay, right.
Yeah.
How did the end amount bounce him?
I don't know. That's it. Just come and got Smith out. I'll just read the headlines.
It. Money worth it.
Yep.
That's what the IPL is. It's worth it. It's just headlines, isn't it? Mm. Just headlines.
That's all it is.
Cameron Green, Pez, how tall is he?
Well, fuck, like
you make one mistake in this game, mate.
Yeah. And we got a lot of messages last week. I got a lot of messages saying he's not 6'1". I was like, okay. I typed Cameron Green into Google. It was his face that came up and it said 6'1". And not only did it say 6'1", it says 184 centimetres. So,
and Pez, who are you to question?
Google. Who would type that in? Oh, it's a very strange number to type in, 184 centimetres. Well, it turns out Greg Chappell alleges over the phone when he says he's the best bat since Ponting. We'll get onto that. Fuck.
How can
he's 6 foot
cricket?
Seven. 6'7", 200 centimetres. I look at him on screen, I'm like, he's tall. He's not 6'1".
He's not 6'1".
Is he 6'7"?
He ain't 6'7".
He's 6'7"?
Curtly Ambrose is 6'7".
Yeah, so we don't know. We don't know how tall he is, which is very important, as people who listen to this cast will know. Tall runs and the entire ecosystem of that is very important in terms of our psychology and mentality.
Yeah, if he's going to get picked or not.
I noticed Greg Chappell was saying on the on this interview where he decided to anoint him the fucking best thing since Ponting, that he is 6'7" and that's a real advantage. He's a tall player. I'm like, what? How? Why is that good?
Yeah. Oh, it's famous. All the best batsmen in the history have been tall. Bradman, Lara, Ponting, all the talls. Tendulkar.
I mean, Chappell should have gone further and said Bradman. He should have just gone all the way.
Yeah.
He's the best since Bradman that I've seen. Now, I noticed Green's in the white ball squad.
Yeah.
Hasn't particularly achieved anything in white ball cricket, which I find interesting. Like, he's done a lot of great Red Bull stuff. That's Stokes.
That's Stokes.
So white ball squad. This X is game and stuff. This is kind of harking back to the old times. Here goes. Yeah. This is
one of my favorite
get
things.
Get him into the coloured clothing stuff.
That's an in and around selection.
It is. It's an around the group selection. It's like give him a bit of an orientation. You know, my son just started a new daycare. They put him in for orientation for a few hours. That's like the white ball squad.
Yeah.
And that's how I explained it to him. my son. Yeah. It's like work experience. Just come in, get around the group. It's like what they did with Philippe recently. Just see what the guys are saying and how they interact. That's how these other elite athletes, many of whom
that's right.
to play in the bubble.
Yes.
Still didn't get any. Like he took a wicket, Green, and he sort of dug into the pitch quite hard, which looked good, but I didn't get any speed gun. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, there's so many people who've scored runs this weekend. There's so many great results through this Shield round, and we're going, as we record, it's going to the last day.
Right.
But there's a lot of wickets, but no speed gun on Green, which is surely the most important statistic we need to bring out.
And his height.
And his height. We can't get a read on how fucking tall this bloke is and how fast he bowls.
Yeah.
It's literally the most important selection question in Australian cricket for at least 20 years.
Yeah. And give us metrics. And I want it actually not in the metric system. I don't want height in metrics. I want that in feet and inches.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah. The old money.
Old money.
Like Drucker said, what can be measured can be managed.
Exactly.
And we need to manage Australia's psychology.
Yeah. Now, it'd be interesting to know how Green goes how he goes getting around the boys and in turn how he has got around. That's actually one of the most important
things. I mean, can you imagine him, A, not getting around the boys, but more importantly, B, them not getting around him?
Couldn't imagine
that. Fucking 6'7", blonde, 140s and averages 50.
Yeah.
There'd be something vastly wrong with him if players are not getting around him, and in turn, him then. Vastly wrong. I need a break.
I'm so tired, man.
I'm closing my eyes, Hayden. It's
such a long winter.
Just flick it on.
Pandemic's fucking killed me. Hey, Stark tried to mancat Marnus. Yeah. Well, he warned him.
It wasn't on. It wasn't a mancat opportunity.
It wasn't a mancat opportunity.
It must have been a...
Marnus bluffed him.
Well, fucking Marnus really pisses blokes off, doesn't he? He does. He really pisses blokes off.
Remember last year with Finch?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't tell the audience about it.
No.
We had with him.
So the thing last year was Finch got 156.
Yeah.
You got a daddy in a one-day game.
You got a daddy.
And Marnus was chirping, and Finch fucking just didn't cop it. Lost it at him, yeah.
And we saw him the following day.
That's right.
At our like the headshots day for Channel 7. And we just like asked Finch, like, what was going on with Marnus? And he's just closed his eyes, man. And it was just like, this guy really pisses him off.
Yeah.
And like, and so Stark's done that to Marnus. He's just, because he's just such a busy little puppy dog. And grade cricketers, like pro cricketers, hate busy puppy dogs who like the game.
Yeah.
Famously. You know what I mean? From club to club.
Yeah. Marnus is a busy puppy dog.
Well, who's the nicest guy in Australian cricket? He's got a touchscreen.
Trent Copeland.
Yeah. Copeland's knocked him over twice. Second time knocks him over for a duck. Have you seen the footage of it? Copeland traps him again, LBW.
Oh, I just saw it on Twitter.
And absolutely, well, he doesn't give it to him, but he basically yells in his face.
Yeah.
He's flexing. His muscles are about to pop out of his lean body.
Yeah.
That's Copeland giving it to Marnus.
Coco. That's Coco.
Our friend Coco. No one's looked slimmer in a suit. And Coco.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's a talking point.
Yeah. It just wasn't on though, was it?
He pisses people off.
What about the record-breaking partnership? Well, no, well on Copeland. He took 5 for 6 at one point. Mm. He finished with 5 for 17 of 25 overs. Mm.
Yeah.
What
grade did he play?
Yeah, he played 2s-3s. Yeah. He played 2s-3s. One of the best bowls in Shield cricket, but beat the 2s-3s.
It wasn't even like 5 for 6 and everyone else was doing well. It was like the score was like 580 or something. Like that. He had the first five wickets, current or former Australian players, except for Bryce Street.
Good for him. Mm. He's a nice guy.
Nice guy, but not quick enough. Sorry, mate.
That's the rules.
Just speaking of guys aren't that quick, just noticed this week, because a lot of people are achieving things in Shield cricket who aren't either Pekowski or Cameron Green.
Yeah.
Jackson Bird is the highest wicket taker for Tasmania ever by 20. Mm-hmm. The next is Ben Hilfenhaus. He's got 280 wickets for Tassie. He's taken more wickets this Shield round as well.
Yep.
He's taken him at 21.
Yep. He's been the best Shield bowler in...
Well, yeah, man, like it's just amazing. I mean, that record is incredible. And we just like completely overlook these guys.
Hasn't he got the most Shield wickets in the decade by a fucking mile? I mean, he's obviously played...
Because he's played for New South Wales as well.
Yeah.
So he's into these 300s. No, Copeland has 3. It'd be him Copeland, and Copeland.
Him and Copeland, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting. It's interesting what happens. Because you see this
but
in...
But it's not quick enough.
You see this in counter cricket as well, where the guys... I can't think of the guy's name.
Darren Stevens.
Darren Stevens. Just buying like dibbly dobblies basically. Yeah. And you look at it and you're like, English wickets with a juke. Mm. Yeah, it does a bit. But like, it's the same thing works in Australia. Like, so that 120s to 125s, maybe closer to 130s on the odd spell. And then
it's probably good for your durability. You can make sure you play every game. Copeland's got a bouncer. People struggle with Copeland's bouncer as well. Anyway, but it's not 140. It doesn't have that number 4 in it, and because it doesn't have number 4, but good.
I mean, fucking respect to Trent and respect to Jackson, my close friends. Yeah. But like, it just goes to show the level up that you need to go for Test cricket. I think that's just basically what it shows. I mean, you look at like Chad Sayers as well. You know, he's got a great record, swings it as well, but then basically Warne ended his career after 3 balls in South Africa. But no, this isn't quick enough. So I don't know. Maybe it's just a level
point up. Is just they're just in really, Australia. Really good bowlers.
Yeah, really good bowlers.
Yeah, and then there's just a couple of worldies who get the test gig.
Well, it's interesting in the Ashes where they pick Siddle. They pick Siddle for control and experience probably, whereas Copeland bowls similar pace.
But Siddle was formerly 150, and so there's always a sense like, yeah, but you've got a little bit of that tiger pace about you.
Siddle basically retained the Ashes by getting 44 in the first innings of Edgbaston, batting with Steve Smith, so job done. Hey, now just very quickly, Marcus Harris, Boogie Harris and Will Bukowski break the War Brothers record that stood for a couple of decades, which was 460-something for the
464.
Highest. 464 for the highest Sheffield Shield partnership in the history of the code, which has been going for about 130 years, not bad. They hit 486 opening the batting, but it was against South Australia. Does it count?
Yeah, it counts. Yeah.
Does count.
Still got to get them.
Yeah, got to get them.
Well, yeah, Firstly, I feel sorry for Marcus Harris.
Yeah, failed.
You know, in those big partnerships as well.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, but whoever ended up with more in the end gets the plaudits. And also, because Harris has accrued a few scars and wounds from his test playing career, we now shine the light on Pekowski, aka Joe Dirt, with his current hair as well.
Yeah. These are prodigal runs.
Have you seen, and I want to talk about that.
Please.
Have you seen any highlights of the innings from Pekowski?
Haven't watched the ball.
Mate, Pekowski is test runs.
Is he?
No, watch it. I encourage everybody. I'm looking down the camera now. Watch it. It's test runs. Mm. Back foot punch.
Yeah,
all
right.
All around the ground. Crisp drives.
Damien Martin shit.
I'm not necessarily saying that. It's just something. I don't want to like talk about his styling. He's got his own
best
style.
Best is Ponting.
Yeah, exactly. Who is he like? Is Ponting or Bradman? Whichever one. No, it's just really, it's just cuts, pulls, drives, flicks, square, straight, and it looks very
360. 360
it looks very, it just looks very test match. Is it correct or it just looks, it looks right.
Yeah.
A question like, you know, Pekowski asked us for a photo in the press box in 2016, by the way.
Did he?
So, yeah.
Was I there?
I asked, sorry.
Right.
No, they were taking him and Will Sutherland through. Anyway, it's too much press box chat.
Yeah.
I think Pekowski and Green, it's too soon to say. The side's going well. I mean,
who captains first?
Heads hit a ton. Yeah. Wade hit 83. Yeah. So they're going okay, right? And they'll probably be in the first test side. But, like, you look at Pekowski and Cameron Green, if they are all that, I think Pekowski is, by the way. Like, do they kind of – they'd almost complete the test side.
Completion. Because I'm going to finish.
Yeah. Completion. So Pekowski, let's say he wants to open the batting now, okay? So you've got him and Warner, Labuschagne, Smith. Okay, Head, you can stay with your 100 and your Boxing Day.
With your fucking whatever.
Cameron Green at 6 now bowling 140s, 10 to 12 overs, you know, averaging. There's a bit of completion about it. Oh,
pieces coming together like a pandemic puzzle back in March.
Indeed. It's just a completion. With you know, apologies to Joe Burns and Matthew Wade who've carved out, you know, 10 to, exactly. Is any of them 6'7", blonde hair?
Now, if I was from Queensland, I'd be like, no, Joe Burns deserves a crack. He doesn't get me off Joe Burns, you know, because I'm not from Queensland. You know, he's done pretty well, Joe Burns, but like he's not the prodigal runs.
It's not prodigal runs anymore. He used to be. He was, but he had his prodigal time.
Yeah.
But Pekowski's the real deal. Now, with respect to Pekowski as well, hope he's well.
Yeah,
hope his head's good.
He said he's been doing well. He said about a week ago, just before the match started. He said things are going well for him. So because he's been in and around the squad for ages, a couple of years.
Yeah.
And hasn't got a crack just yet. Yeah,
it looks good. The runs look really good.
Well, they obviously liked him for ages.
You know, it's like when someone gets a lot of shield runs and stuff, but you've never really seen him. It's grainy footage. You see them play test match, going, that's not it.
Zapruder film runs.
That ain't it.
Yeah.
Pekowski's it.
He's it.
Yeah.
Fuck, that's
it. We're ready. Fuck, we're ready. He's about where you want.
Now, if you're going to pick him though, Pez.
Yeah.
Do you want to pick him when he has to face Bumrah?
Yeah.
You know, or do you want to come in when he faces Stuart Broad with a Kookaburra? And don't open the batting. Bat him at 6 when he comes in at 400 for 3.
Mate, I think Pekowski's ready. I think he's good to go. I think just get him going. He looks test runs to me.
Okay.
It's where he belongs. He's a throbber. He belongs up there. Get him in there. He's 10 years.
Okay.
10, 15.
And he's friend of the show. Pez, WBBL, not much to
report. Victoria's got good beanies, by the way.
They got beanies?
Seb Gotch is wearing a floppy. Yeah, just chuck that
in. Seb Gotch is wearing a floppy cap.
Yeah, with a cap underneath it.
Oh, my God. Yeah. He's just trolling again.
Yeah.
Looking forward to the Big Bash starting. Yeah. But the WBBL has started, Pez, sort of. They've played 12 games have been scheduled and 5 have been played and 7 have been washed out.
Yeah.
So the rain strikes again. Sydney, La Nina.
Sydney doing Sydney things.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? And whenever there's a game on, it seems to rain.
Mm.
Unfortunate. Yeah, La Nina is going to play a bit of havoc, won't it? That's like, no, I said last, was it last week I said that? Or a couple of weeks ago? Where it gets hotter. It doesn't get hotter. It's a cooling period, as you just rightly pointed out to me before the show. But it means more
it's
rain.
It's the cooling
more
offset of El Nino.
Yes, right. Okay. Yeah. But it means there's higher humidity, which means way more rain. So there's more cyclones, which would feed into that. That's why there's that.
Right, yeah. Because cricketers should always have a little bit of extra weather knowledge as well, just by virtue of being cricketers.
Oh, it always comes from over those trees over there.
Exactly.
Does it mate?
Just look at your watch. Your watch doesn't even work.
Yeah, yeah. Get bomb up.
Yeah.
Get the radar up.
Yeah.
When you see red, that's death.
Exactly. Or count the seconds between the thunderstorm, the lightning, or whichever way around that is.
Seven kilometers.
Seven kilometers. We've got to go.
Yeah.
Hey, speaking of that, I had a really good mate of mine, a coach of a club in Melbourne, and he was talking about, like, just for all those people out there who are dealing with COVID regulations.
Yeah,
Melbourne's obviously back playing.
So remind me what those are.
I don't know what they are, but they've got to have, like, they've got, every club needs a COVID marshal, I think. And so I'm imagining they get like a yellow fluoro vest and everything like that. He's just telling me a story about, like, turning up, and he'd set out the ground. He'd organise people in groups, a lot of space between COVID marshal, who, you know, at least at this club, has been ascribed to somebody just completely drunk on power who has nothing else.
Yeah.
No, the reason for
train ticket inspector, parking officer, that kind of gear. Yeah.
You know, I'm just only saying this because I presume this is the case at other clubs, but it turns up, no, you can't do it there. Actually, got to
There's no
the
way.
You got to do this, you got to do this. And then my mate goes, did you bring the hand sanitizer? Nah.
There's no way the COVID marshal is the most ripping bloke of the club.
Yeah.
Like, get around the COVID marshal within a safe 1.5
It could be. Distance. I think they could be. But if you've got any good COVID marshal stories, because, you know, we're always mining for content here, the COVID marshal should give rise to some very great cricket level jokes.
Yeah. Pez, the Australia-India schedule has been announced. Just a couple of quick ones here. So they're going to start in Adelaide. There's the day-night test match. Then they move to Boxing Day in Melbourne, which they're talking about, thankfully, that there's going to be crowds for the Boxing Day test.
25K.
Then they're going to play in Sydney for the New Year's test as per, and they're going to finish the Indian tour in Brisbane for the last game. Now, there's been some speculation here, Pezzy lad, that India aren't going to get a tour game, and they're going to have to play in Adelaide under lights with no practice. So Australia here looking at 4-0 sweep.
Oh, minimum.
Yeah. Especially that India, that spicy Melbourne deck.
Well, once again, Australia accommodating opposing nations with tour games beforehand.
Yeah.
This time, probably pretty good reason, I'd say.
Because we're scared.
Global pandemic. We're
scaredy bats.
Yeah. That's what we called India, didn't we, a couple of years ago? Scaredy bats?
Yeah, when they beat us.
That's right.
They beat us out here.
Pretty easily. Couldn't get Bumrah. Oh, what's his name? Pajara.
Pajara, yeah. The other bloke. Yeah. Couldn't get Bumrah.
couldn't even get him in.
Yeah. Couldn't get him in. That was a problem. Pez, before we go to the break, Justin Lang has been speaking to Adam Goods about what can, should be done, will be done heading into the summer in terms of reconciliation and the BLM.
The knee. Taking the knee. Yeah. Oh, it's good to hear him do that. Who knows what they'll do? Again, like we said last week, it sounds like Cricket Australia is retaining an open mind about that kind of thing. I noticed Michael Holding came out this week and said he believes that in Australia and elsewhere, they should be taking a knee until many of the racial injustices are solved.
Right.
Just paraphrasing Michael Holding, it's not me saying that.
Yeah.
But Langer was on the record saying that he is consulting a number of Indigenous figures, you know, both Goods and either an Aboriginal elder or many. Mm-hmm. And so he's still thinking about it. It'd be interesting to see what they're doing. Glad to hear the conversation is still going. We asked Meg Lanning about it, who's coming up next as well. So, you know, it sounds it's small steps to say that it's good that they're still considering things, but that's better than what many other sports have done or what's happened in the past. So
100%.
Great to see them doing it sincerely.
100%, Pez, and well said. All right, Meg Lanning is coming up, and then after that, hashtag AskTGC.
Don't play cricket for results. I don't come to take wickets, score runs, or win games. I play cricket to look good. Rigs, chests, pipes, circuits, salads. This is my domain. So when I hit the sheds, I need to radiate success. That's why I use Chop King Cologne by TGC. With a blend of the finest handcrafted English willow and Kookaburra Red King leather, Chop King Cologne lets me radiate cricket. Whatever the ground, whatever the circuit. Chop King Cologne. The new fragrance for men by TGC. Reek of runs without hitting them.
He goes, the person I'm speaking to is only 28 years old, has represented her country 193 times already across all formats. In ODI cricket, she averages 55 with 14 tons, 15 50s and a high score of 152 not out.
Not bad.
In T20 cricket, she averages 36 with 2 tons, 13 50s and a high score. in T20 cricket of 133 not out. He did well that day. She's the absolute worldie of the Australian women's team, debuting for her country at 18, scoring a ton in her second game, captaining the country at 21. She leads a team that's won Ashes, World Cups, and is currently on an unbelievable streak of 21 ODI wins in a row. So, you know, with good reason, she's now decided to give an interview to two third graders from a good while ago.
100%.
It's Meg Lanning. Meg, welcome to The Grade Cricketer.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Just for the benefit of all listeners there, that's the second time I've done that intro and Mitch just had to endure that. Yeah.
But the first time was so much better as well.
Yeah, exactly. Sick of the laughs, I called it. So, Meg, you debuted for Victoria in 2008, age 16. Now, all listeners will know that, you know, because of the rough and tumble ritual of grade cricket, you have to go through every grade before playing for your state. So I can only guess you debuted in grade cricket at age 9 or so.
I think I might have been 11 or 12, something like that anyway. And I think debuted in second grade for Box Hill, my team in Melbourne. I don't think I made many runs the first couple of goes. So I spent till the first season in second grade and then went up to first grade and then, made my way to the Victorian team, which is great.
What's the conversation like at 11 or 12 years of age when presumably your parents say, look, I think you're ready for twos?
Yeah.
Well, Mum and Dad were always very supportive, but we're all a very competitive family as well. So I think Dad was pretty pumped that I got to play in the senior team, and second grade was pretty good. So I think it was all really exciting. To be honest, I had no idea what I was doing. I was just going to play cricket, which I loved, and it just happened to be second grade at the time.
We often hear, Meg, about the girls being put into the first grade, the first 11 team, their school team, from a young age. Well, I'm guessing that you had the exact same situation. I'm not even going to ask you if you did do that. I'm going to presume you did. So how old were you when you played for your first 11 school team?
I think I was 14 at the end of year 9.
There it is.
So I played with the boys from year 7 and then, I got picked in the first 11 at the end of year 9, which was a really challenging experience. I bowled pretty fast. I wasn't really sure what I was doing. I remember facing Lewis Cameron one day in the first 11 and I think he played first 11 to get a lesson. And I'm not sure I actually saw the ball when he was bowling. It sort of hit me rather than me hitting it, but that was always good fun. Mm.
And look at him now, he's a cricket journo and you're
captain.
So, you know, he really won that. Well, Meg, I mean, I've been doing a bit of digging on this. Like, I'm sure you're probably tired of questions about playing against boys and that kind of stuff. So I hope I've brought a different angle to this, but, you know, like everyone knows you're an absolute worldie with the bat, but I'm told during school you used to roll down a few questionable meds too. So we have done some digging here, and there was one moment when these meds got the better of a first 11 captain at one of these prestigious schools. Now, I just want to know whether you were aware of the sheer fear these boys would have been feeling, like for toxic masculinity reasons.
Yeah, brittle.
At the prospect of being dismissed by a female in year 9 or 10 bowling meds. And did you feel like you were actually able to burgle a few overs just because of their fear as well and keep the run rate down? Like, what sort of fear did you see in their eyes?
Yeah, I knew they were pretty nervous, to be honest. It actually gave me a really good advantage because they clearly didn't want to get out to me, so they didn't play any shots. I bought them absolute pies too, but they didn't manage to hit them because I think they were too worried about getting out. And I was able to get a few wickets back in the day when I was a bowler. I'm retired now, by the way. I quite enjoyed that, actually. I didn't have many expectations, but they were absolutely, they were so nervous. Awesome. So I sort of, jumped on that and was able to sneak a few wickets along the way too.
Like everyone we speak to just absolutely dominates, you know, club cricket, and rightfully so, because they're all wonderful internationals. Last week we spoke to Sir Curtly Ambrose. I just call him Curtly now because we're close personal friends. Kurt. But he took 115 wickets in a club season for a club which he actually forgot the team's name, which is part of the whole thing, I think, for Curtly. Let me read something I read from January 2017, 2019, Meg. Meg Lanning celebrated her return to Premier Cricket by establishing a new record score of 244 for Box Hill against Plenty Valley at City Oval. Meg and sister Anna, 85, put on 218 for the opening partnership. Meg's innings eclipse her previous record of 241 not out against Melbourne in 2012-13. She faced 145 balls, hit 39 fours and 2 sixes. Plenty Valley were never in the hunt, chasing Box Hill's massive 2 for 384 and finished 9 for 192. I mean, how satisfying is it to play a game where you outscored the opposition?
I love going back and playing club cricket.
I'm sure you do.
Evidently.
At Box Hill's always good fun. And, I guess the bat with Anna as well is, a good thing. And, that was just, one of those days, I guess, where I got a bit of a flyer. And then once you get in, you just you just keep going. 50 overs is a very long time. And so, I was just able to keep going. So, it's always a bit of fun when I go back and, I was able to get a few that day, which was nice.
Got a few.
Yes. just before we get into the sort of your current stuff, Meg, again, from when you were younger, you moved from Sydney to Melbourne for high school, but not before playing in a junior side with Elise Perry. All cricketers know that, it's not just about where you finish, it's about where you started and all the sort of social status that's kind of contained within.
That's right.
And as you describe it, you opened the batting with Elise, but she was the superstar and the captain. So just again, is it great to know that you're now her skipper and therefore the alpha of that relationship?
100%.
I've never really thought about that. When we played, it was the Sydney North, the regional team that we were in.
You remember the team?
I remember the team. And that was my first actual cricket tournament. So I was very much new to the game. But Elise Perry was sort of the name that everyone talked about, being the superstar, and she certainly was back then and still is now. We opened the batting. She knew all the rules. I remember this one game. I actually got out caught, I think, and she actually noticed that there were three fielders behind square leg, and that's not allowed, obviously. So she told the umpire, and I was actually called back to the crease. So she helped me out that day. Looking back, it was pretty cool. We played together then and still playing together now.
Mm. Just with that dismissal, were you caught behind square, or you'd actually just tried to loft one straight and at least still remember?
No, I don't think I was caught behind square. I think I was caught somewhere else. But, I didn't even know that was rule at the time. Mm. So I'm glad she was switched on because it saved me.
Awesome. Now, just going over your career, you've played for Australia somehow already for 10 years, even though you're only 28. 5 World Cups, captained 3 of those, 3 Blinder Clark medals. You're the youngest Australian male or female to score an international 100, youngest World Cup winning captain. Meg, this is some this is some Bradman shit we're on here. We're talking absolute domination of the game. Are you aware of the legacy you've already created? And do you have any more goals? What am I asking? Why are you still playing? You've done everything.
To be honest, when you sort of put that list together, it's been a pretty good 10 years.
It's pretty good.
When I came into the team, we were extremely successful to start off with, and I was playing with some incredible players who sort of set the foundation for us to be playing now. And, even now we've got some incredible world-class players and some really good young players coming through, which I think has probably been the thing for us, which has allowed us to keep being successful as the young players coming in and really performing straight away. So, it's an exciting time. I guess the next thing on the horizon is that 50 over World Cup. We obviously exited the last one in not a great way, I guess. So that's probably the one thing driving me and the team at the moment. So we look forward to that.
You do seem driven because that team seems driven because you've won 21 games in a row. and you're absolutely unstoppable. I got a two-pronged question on that. The women's team is so professional now. So are you aware that we now expect you to win every single fixture you play and experience a visceral reaction if you don't? And then two, do you embrace the idea that the Australian women's team now plays such an important role in helping us all feel safe through winning cricket?
Yep.
we certainly enjoy winning and want to win as much as we can. So, that's something we obviously try to do. But I think we also have a lot of fun enjoying each other's company as well as a squad. We've got a really good crew together. And, it's been nice to be able to get that streak going, I guess. As a team, we want to go out there and win. And hopefully there's plenty more down the track too.
I mean, 21 wins in a row is quite something. It actually equals Ponting's team's record, doesn't it? I mean, but are you already prepared to, berate the team for the loss that you're never going to have? Or are you going to say, well, it's a loss we had to have?
I sort of have the
Which one of those two?
You've got to lose eventually. Hopefully it's not the next one. Hopefully we can get the record. We actually don't know when that next game is, to be honest.
Yeah.
So we're not really sure. But we are going to lose eventually. That is the nature of the game. But, hopefully we've still got one more winning us before that happens.
Because you're supposed to have India, isn't in January? Was mm-hmm. that's what's supposed to happen. So, I mean, if that does go ahead, what are we looking at here? Clean sweep?
At least.
Yep. Oh, geez, I hope so.
Yeah, I got to yes.
Oh, yeah, so it's so much up in the air at the moment. Yeah, India obviously planned to come out to Australia, but we haven't had confirmation on that yet. So we're just sort of, waiting and, watching to see when our next game is. But I know we're all looking forward to it. So hopefully it's sooner rather than later.
Yeah.
Meg, here's the thing I want to know. Earlier this year, a report came out naming the Australian women's team Australia's favourite team, or at least we have the greatest emotional connection to that team. And you speak so well, all the teammates speak so well about the fun you guys have and how lovely you guys are as people. But we are Australian cricket fans after all, and you guys have won 21 in a row and are completely unstoppable. I mean, there's got to be a ruthless edge to it. You know, like what are the skeletons, you know, within that side? You know, take us into the dark recesses.
Yeah. Who's
you
got
know?
Demons?
What is it that makes this Australian side so hard-edged and just, unbeatable at the moment?
Yeah, I think, generally we're very competitive individuals within the team, but there's a lot of unique personalities as well, which I think bring a lot of different things to the entertainment both on and off the field. Players like Megan Shute, who is a great fit for the team, but she says it how it is. Exactly what she's thinking all the time, which I think is an important part of it as well. And but the young kids coming in, Sophie Molyneux, Georgia Ware, and players like that who just come in and lighten the place up a bit. So we're competitive no matter what we're doing. I mean, we're in the hub at the moment. We've got table tennis and basketball and cards and things like that, and everyone just wants to win. So it's probably not surprising that on the field we do the same thing.
Mm. You mentioned a couple of great players there in the squad. Obviously, you grew up with Elise Perry, who was obviously always going to be the gun. You're a gun yourself. And then you've got young Annabelle Sutherland, who got herself into the World Cup squad as well, World Cup winner's medal for the T20 World Cup just gone. I mean, like how good could she be? Because I know there's massive raps on her.
Yeah, she's going to be extremely good. Just in the last year, having been able to train sort of full-time, having finished school, she only finished last year, having finished school, so she's been able to train properly. She's really good athletically, can move really well, really strong, and her skills are incredible as well. Just the power she's got with the bat, it's actually quite dangerous batting at the other end sometimes. She can hit it back pretty hard, so it's going to be really exciting to see where she ends up, but I've got no doubt she'll be a superstar down the track.
Have you noticed the change in the sort of celebrity of the team after the World Cup? It was obviously such a massive event, and the way it was timed, I suppose, as well, in terms of the pandemic, it was sort of the last major world sporting event just before everything sort of, went the way it did. I mean, have you guys noticed, just in the street, individually being recognised more, and as a team as a whole, like that sort of level of celebrity has been lifted or elevated?
Yeah, I think so. No doubt about that. We got quite lucky with the timing of the game. Like 3 days later, we probably wouldn't have had it. So I guess it is the last big sporting event that happened in Australia, and that has probably helped us as well in a way. It's sort of the lasting memory. So certainly, getting recognised a little bit more, and even in the media and things like that, there's a lot more interest in the game, and the recent series yet against New Zealand, and now the Big Bash as well. So I think that's only a good thing for the game and women's sport in general, and hopefully it can continue to improve.
Because it was 86,000 people, wasn't it, for the final, and 3 days later sort of it all kicked off. So, what I'm saying is the women's team responsible for the lockdown in Melbourne?
Apparently there was someone at the game that had COVID. Oh, we were walking around the oval, hugging people, high-fiving, nothing was going on. So who knows? I don't think we were responsible, but geez, if it was there, it was probably gonna keep going. But I'm so glad that it was 3 days later and not that night.
Yeah, Katy Perry had COVID. That's interesting.
It doesn't matter. Dan Andrews' fault. Meg, just on that as well. Like it was the crowning moment of the Australian cricket summer, without doubt. Like, just in time before COVID really hit. Like, do you have any sense of how the hit to the game's finances might affect women's cricket? I know there's been a lot of talk about that worldwide. Mm-hmm. And if not, like, what sort of confidence do you have that administrations home and abroad will protect the women's game?
Yeah, I'm pretty confident. I think even just like with the Big Bash that's happening at the moment, we've still got every game being played. They've done everything they can to get that up and running. So I think that's a really good sign. I think, you know, the women's game is really important to cricket in driving numbers, both participation and crowds as well. So I think sort of the boards around the world are seeing that. And, yeah, I'm very confident that that won't drop off. It might look slightly different to the next couple of years just to get back on our feet, I guess. But, yeah, I think Cricket Australia's done an excellent job in growing the women's game, and I don't think they're going to let that slip.
Just on the WBBL, Meg, we know that Sydney's doing what it does and just deciding to rain, hopefully raining whenever there's a game on. But we know that there's been sort of plenty of activity within and between teams in relation to taking a knee before play. That's been a big topic of conversation, and we know it's being handled team by team. Like, can you just give an insight into what those conversations look like, and maybe as Aussie skipper, how you're approaching it?
Yeah, there's been a lot of discussions around it. I think that's a really good thing, trying to create awareness and education around, standing up against racism and diversity within the game and society as well. And each team has sort of taken a slightly different stance. We are united in standing against racism, but it probably looks slightly different for each team. The captains of each team have sort of caught up and had a chat around what that looks like. And, whether some people take a knee or don't take a knee, it's sort of their individual decision, but everyone's sort of supported in whatever they choose to do. But it's very clear from everyone here that we want a diverse game, and we want anyone to be able to come and play and feel comfortable, and hopefully we can influence a few people, I guess, in society to try and make sure that we're standing up against racism, and we're really supportive of that. Mm.
That's really good and really encouraging to hear. We noted a few days ago that Justin Langer had actually, the Aussie coach had sought out Adam Goods to try and learn more and educate himself a little bit more. And he sort of said of his own volition that the men's team hadn't, I don't actually know his exact words, I don't have them in front of me, but essentially, not done well enough the last time this issue came up. Do you feel sort of as Aussie skipper a responsibility to educate yourself a little bit more or anything like that in terms of how you individually approach it, particularly given Justin Langer and other leaders are sort of doing things like that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's really important. And as an Australian squad, it sort of started back in February this year where we took part in the Barefoot Circle, an Indigenous game in Canberra. And we did a little bit of education around that. We've obviously got Ash Gardner within our squad. He's very passionate about it and is really helping us to learn more about it. And I guess that's the most important point, is that we're trying to educate ourselves a little bit more and learn more about the culture and also celebrate the Indigenous culture as well. I think sometimes we can talk about some of the issues that are going on, and they're really important to know about and try and change. But I think there's also a lot to celebrate within the Indigenous culture as well, and learn about what they believe in and that sort of stuff. So as an Australian squad, and hopefully it feels this down through state squads as well, we're trying to learn as much as we can so we feel more comfortable talking about it. And it might be asking questions perhaps that we are not really sure about, but if we can learn more about it, then I think that's going to be a good thing for cricket and society as well.
Yeah, I love that. I think obviously the Women's Big Bash, the WBBL, has been so successful here in Australia, and for cricketers all around the world to come here as well to play. And then we've seen recently that the IPL are going to set up, the Women's IPL is going to be played in November or run concurrently at the same time as the WBBL. I mean, how do the players feel about that?
Yeah, obviously we'd love to be part of both, if it was possible. And unfortunately this year it clashed. I'm not sure if that's going to be the case moving forward as well. Hopefully it's not. I think there's enough time within the calendar to have different windows for the WBBL and the IPL, and hopefully sort of the board can communicate and sort of get a bit of a plan together moving forward, because I think it's really important that the best international players are available to play in the WBBL, the IPL, and probably the 100 coming up over in the UK. I think they're sort of the three big ones, and I think there's enough time within the calendar to allow for that to happen. So I think that's going to kick off pretty soon, that IPL stuff. It'll be interesting to see how it goes, but India obviously play a really big role in cricket, and hopefully down the track we can all be a part of it.
Really big role they play.
Quite a big role.
Meg, it's been a huge honour for us to speak with you, the Aussie skipper. You're obviously doing Bradman-style things. We've loved talking about that. Please keep winning and please keep scoring runs because it makes us all feel safe. Thank 100%. You.
No worries. Thank you.
And he goes, there's about six or seven predominant social media platforms out there.
Have you got a favourite?
At this stage, no. I don't think so. But
Pinterest? I've been on your Tumblr in a while.
There's one platform that's more kind of work and career focused than the others. Yeah. And that's LinkedIn.
Yeah.
And this week saw one of the great LinkedIn, I believe, LinkedIn posts.
Yeah.
I believe LinkedIn posts usually defeat all other posts on other social media platforms for comedy.
Well,
in its own way.
The famous thing is the state of LinkedIn.
Yeah.
The fucking state of LinkedIn.
And I saw one of the great posts of all time this week, and it does relate to cricket.
Yes, you did. Yes.
It was from a former Australian Test cricketer.
Yeah.
From 10 years ago.
Yep.
Peter George.
Peter George.
Who I believe has created the technology to detect no balls now. So he seems to be doing quite well as a young executive.
Now, when you say detect no balls, you mean the front foot line?
Front foot, no balls.
Yeah, right.
No, okay. Not Manscaped. That's coming up next. Silly. And he said, this is what Peter George wrote. I'm just going to read it to you. One test for India, Peter George. He wrote, this month I celebrated 10 years since the moment I dismissed Sachin Tendulkar when I donned test cap 416 for Australia, a pinnacle moment of my 14-year cricket career. 10 years later, I'm celebrating a big moment in my post-cricket entrepreneurial career as we announce the appointment of Rob Goodsward as executive advisor for Sport Tech Industries. Now, what a railroad that is, he goes. And with that in mind, we'd like to talk about Budgie Smuggler.
How can I tie these two? Didn't he also in that post being like, and like Sachin was a big part of the Indian team, Rob is also going to be big. Like, what?
Awesome.
Now Rob's fucking Sachin?
Awesome.
But Rob's got a lot of pressure. It's like when Chappell said Chris Green's ponting.
I'd take it.
Cameron Green.
And speaking of incongruously tied things, Budgie Smuggler's got bucket hats and other apparel for you this summer.
Yeah.
And you know what? We like to sit here, guys, with our great friends at Budgie Smuggler who make everything Australian made from this nation that we're speaking in now.
That's right.
Okay.
They do.
And offer a few design suggestions.
Okay.
Because you can custom design whatever goes on your bucket hat or your Budgie Smugglers or whatever. All right. So here's a few ideas. Now, in the spirit of Peter George, a couple of one test wonders for you.
One test wonders.
And I mean that with respect. I don't mean like, oh, it's a wonder they got a test. Yep. Absolutely not. Got the baggy green cap.
Yep.
Fuck off.
You've achieved the thing that
got
every
the thing.
The most what percentage of people in Australia would want that? 100?
100% of 100%? People would want that. Yeah. I'd say green. So. Yeah, I think my mother-in-law, she would want a baggy green.
If she gets your phone call, do you want a baggy green? Not for me. You're taking that. 100% you're taking that.
Yeah.
So 100%
Australian citizens,
Yep, correct.
Okay. Some might not know what it is.
They still want it.
That baggy green.
Still want it. What do I have to do?
It's a baggy jumper or something like that, yeah.
Oh, the Sachin.
Well, here's a few one test wonders. Stuart Law.
Yep.
Should have played many more.
Stuart Law was one of my favourite players growing up. Number 10 ODI shirt.
This is a big question, but like of the guys who didn't get a good go, of all the bats, I'm going to say Stuart Law was the best of them.
He was prodigal runs as well. He was tapped up from a young
Stuart
age.
Law is someone you can say that had he played, even in that generation, would well have averaged 47.5 or more.
I agree. Yeah.
It would have, Stuart Law runs during the Ashes. Oh, Law's in ton.
Yeah,
that's what I'm thinking.
That's true. It's one of those ones where like you say, I should have played more. It's like, yeah, who are you dropping? Probably Ponting. He was pretty good.
But you know, Lehman got a go, like 25 got tests, and he didn't get Lehman Shield runs.
Didn't he get Lehman?
He got some runs. Lehman runs.
Martin Shield Love. Runs.
Well, and he played.
He had one test.
He got more than one test.
Did he? He got a couple?
Love, yeah, he got a couple. And he got a double ton, didn't he, Martin Love? Yeah.
In a test?
Yeah, he definitely tonned up. I don't know. Mate,
is that right?
Yeah.
I remember getting like 60 in his debut.
Just look it up.
If only there was one way to know. What are some other ones? Gavin Robinson? Young?
He played more. Sean Young.
It was he played one?
Sean Young played one. And who else we got here? We got Clint Mackay.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Dan Cullen.
Yep.
Your mate, can't believe you haven't said it, Matty Nicholson.
Yeah. John Hastings.
Hasto and Phil Emery, who actually got his test in Pakistan. He's the only keeper other than Gilchrist and Healy to have kept the Shane Warne at test level. Phil Emery played one test, and he was in Pakistan when he got that gig, and he had to be Ian Healy for a couple of days because he didn't have a passport or something, or when he flew over.
Cricket in the 90s, man. Yeah. It's just different. It's just different breed, that stuff.
Martin Love, I said double time. His high score was 100 not out for Australia.
Oh, okay, so you got
100.
Yeah, 100, 150. Good for him.
So a couple of one test wonders for you there. There's plenty of others, of course. But you can think about what you want on that apparel, whether it is Budgie Smuggler, you know, bottoms, whether it's a bucket hat, whatever it is. And you can go to budgiesmuggler.com and work that shit out. Australian made. And use the code CHAMP at checkout for free shipping.
Free shipping. Free shipping. What's it? What is it again, Pez? Website?
Budgiesmuggler.com.
Pez, Manscaped is back
yeah.
to support the show this week. Yep. Now, not only is Manscaped
they come once
back,
a month or so.
Not Manscaped. They're back, but they're bigger than ever. They've got a new product. Their new product, Pez, it's called the Weed Whacker. The Great Cricketer podcast is promoting a product called the Weed Whacker. Look how far we've come.
Mirror, mirror on the wall, what is the best brand for my balls? Manscaped, of course. Hold up, is that a nose pube? Good thing our partners at Manscaped are here to ensure you're taking care of your manhood here and your nose hairs with their new performance package that just launched in the UK. Also available in Australia and Canada.
You got fucking Jekyll and Hyde going on over there.
Yeah.
And
you're just noticing.
Yeah.
You can get the Weed Whacker, here goes, as part of the performance package.
Yes, you can.
Now, look, Weed Whacker, let's just get into it. There's a lot of stuff they want us to say. That was your nickname at school.
Performance package.
Oh, the Weed Whacker. The Weed Whacker gets your nose in your ears.
Yeah.
Right? Now, we've talked a lot about the Manscaped before, the lawnmower and stuff like that. Yeah. It's good. It solves your issues, okay? You want to shave your pubes
and your balls. No, that's no joke.
That's no joke.
You can use in the shower.
It's incredible. I used it again, once again.
Yep.
And you don't look like an adolescent. You don't look like prepubescent. It doesn't take that much off.
No, it's perfect.
But it takes enough it's clean and tidy. It's done. You're done. You've sorted out. Yep. We've already said that.
Yep. People already know that.
But the Weed Whacker, you could just have to apply the same design principles.
Yep.
Now, I'm getting on in age.
Sure.
I grow hair where I wouldn't like to grow hair.
Sure.
Okay? And vice versa.
Yeah.
And I get some nose hairs.
Yeah.
Yep. And the Weed Whacker's sorting me out again.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Thanks to the team at Manscaped.
Yeah. It's just such a simple design.
Yeah.
Actually, both of them are.
Are they?
Both of them are. No, it's just a perfect product that's just like, you know, don't need to talk about it for too long on a podcast. Let's say 10, 15 minutes talking about it. But it's just perfect. Does the job. Job done.
Look, and on this copy, it says, look, fellas, 79% of partners polled admitted that long nose hair is a major turnoff.
Yeah.
Why not? And 79%.
Now
21%.
Well, I said 100% wanted the baggy green, but only 79% saying long nose hairs are a turn off.
What's the poll question there? Because this is US election time.
Yeah.
What's the poll question?
I think they're off, those polls.
But the poll's saying long nose hair.
Yeah.
Are they a turn off?
Yeah.
And so what? 21% of people are saying no.
It doesn't bother me.
Mm.
They're liars. Well,
I'm not
they're
turned
liars.
Off.
21% of those people are liars.
Not necessarily saying they're turned on. Bias.
But those are different things.
Yeah, that's right. Things. And that's why polling questions are very important.
That's a good point.
But now we're not talking about Manscaped, we're talking about polls.
Right.
Anyway, a whole bunch of other stuff here as well. Listen, you can get the performance package, the Weed Whacker, the lawnmower if that's what you want, because it sorts your hair out, that excess hair you don't want. If you want it tidied up, Manscaped's where you go. Now this week, this month, he goes, we've been given what they're calling a vanity URL.
Here we go.
Manscaped.com/TGC. It's a unique link. Okay. That's where you get your 20% off. Now, look, if that doesn't work for whatever reason, you can just go to manscaped.com and in the bloody checkout thing, type in TGC. You're still going to get 20% off. Now, I don't know how that helps our metrics and whatever for our good friends at Manscaped. Probably poorly. I just want to get you the package and I want you to get 20% off. Mm. All right. We'll deal with the rest later when we deal with the lovely people in Los Angeles.
Mm. It seems ironic that we're given a vanity URL for manscaping, but I like it. There's some sort of.
I don't think it's vain to trim your pubes, man. Really. It's not vanity. No, what else are you meant to do?
Polite. Because
you've got, like, what, are you just going to leave it for your life?
Yeah, it's polite. 21%. Fuck off. That's
get
not
out
right.
Here.
That's
I
not
mean,
right.
Weird.
Ooh, fuck out of here.
Get out of here. Manscaped.com/TGC.
Hashtag RCDC, Pezzy Lad. Last one for a couple of weeks. Unless you're on Patreon, in which case you get it every single week, amongst other things. Little bonuses. Little
extras, you're in there.
Little things in the works as well. A little something, something. Anything else to say, Pez?
About Patreon?
I don't know. Anything.
Just life.
Yeah. The show?
I'm looking forward to coming back. Looking forward to recharging the batteries.
Yeah.
Okay? After we absolutely annihilate this last RSTGC.
Would it be fair to say that Ed Cowan will start off the summer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As going to get tradition,
as a tradition.
Maybe somebody else will come along. I mean, if Marlon Samuels in between times says yes.
Probably going to say no.
Flood Samuels. Marlon Samuels, by the way. Like, yeah. No problem with that. His DMs are open.
Yeah.
Tell him to go on TGC. I'm serious.
Yeah, probably don't listen to this episode. I call him a cunt four times, but.
He doesn't need to know that.
That's his fault, not doing his own research. I think he's probably a massive cunt, though. James Henchy writes in. He says, howdy, Higgy Siggy and Perry Perry Sauce. Long-time listener, first-time Ask TGC-er here. I usually listen on Spotify for those dirty house tracks, but I thought I'd head over to the YouTube channel for the first time last week and get around that a bit. What happened next came at me from left field. In seeing you both your faces in the flesh on the screen, I found that I had to start to consider the idea that both might actually be like well-rounded people with multifaceted personalities. Sam has a very natural smile when he speaks and quite kind eyes to go with his trimmed beard, making me think he might be a really loving father and a mature husband. Ian has the jaded look of an idealist struggling to find where he fits into the greater capitalist dystopia in which we all dwell.
I've always said that.
He has a law degree but hasn't made it as a lawyer, and the brow of his enormous forehead furrows frequently as he sighs at further reports of racism across the cricketing world. Great rig, though, and seems great around the boys while trying to be more than that. Hope you find a girlfriend who appreciates your manscaping, Hig. Before this, I simply thought of the two of you as not just cricket badgers, but literal badgers, hunched in some car with stubbies who thought about nothing but cricket, kind of like the grubs. More podcast beef? Bizarre to see you both in the flesh, titillating even for the softer side of me. Show is a cracker, and I hope you both continue to survive in the freakishly niche market you've created for yourselves. Love, James.
Well, he goes, you read things like that sometimes, particularly
sometimes.
Commentary on the, you know, the physical self.
Yeah.
That's been happening more and more. We've put ourselves on camera. You can't really expect otherwise.
Seems to be a lot of commentary about, I've seen you and here are my problems.
That's right. Here's how this does not match up to my imagination.
Yeah, exactly.
Fix it.
Yeah, yes.
I'm just trying to mediate that in my head.
That's
but
right.
This one, I was waiting for the backhander. It never came. Okay, sure. James, who says, love James, says you have an enormously big forehead. That's not true.
Yeah.
I have that. But, there's no hair, so it's sort of forehead. It actually is an endless forehead, really. I've been bald for a long time.
Yeah, yeah. It's almost like you're okay with it. Yeah.
Yeah, almost.
Yeah.
If I woke up in the morning and said there was a cure for it that did cause impotence.
You're having a look.
I'll have a look.
You're
at
using
it.
The vanity URL.
Yeah, that's right. At the moment, the only drugs you can get, they say, causes impotence. What's the point of hearing it? Seriously, quite guys, I've looked into the drugs for it like 10 years ago. Propecia, okay? It can only thicken the existing hair. You can't grow back dead follicles, okay? And when it thickens the existing hair at $40 a week, all right, and causes impotence or is a possible side effect, what's the point of having hair if you're going to be fucking impotent? Just accept it. Yeah. If you're losing it, just go. Get rid, okay? Blacked out for a sec.
Welcome
but
back.
Yeah, no, that was really nice from James. The backhander never came. So thank you. That's kind. Concerning. I suppose that it was only upon superficially seeing the physical embodiment of our souls that he was like, oh, you might be well-rounded people.
Doesn't what come was across he?
Yeah,
in
like
the audio medium.
What is it? What's that? Oh, you've got a trimmed beard. Oh, now you must be a loving father.
We actually did at one time. We actually were literal badgers one time.
That's true.
The evolution's been quite a thing. It happens quicker than what you think, actually.
What are you, literal badgers?
But yeah, the evolution of the podcast has been quite something because it was last year when I used to live next to a Woolworths dock, and at that time in the morning during the World Cup, we were broadcasting like 5 a.m.
Yes.
After those games, and then like that's when the Woolworths trucks used to come in. So they used to like reverse in like basically next to my fucking window.
Yeah.
So I had a doona over my fucking head to like try and noise cancel the sound of the microphone. Yeah. And now we have our own little studio and we do our own shit here, but you know, Pez and I are together in Melbourne, so there's that. You were in your car as well for those.
Yeah, I was in the car in Preston at the front, child asleep, and I rest a microphone on the glove box, which had been unhooked, so it was laying flat.
Yeah.
And pull my legs up and have a doona over my head.
using
some strange software to talk to you and hoping that an internet connection.
Through rain, on top of the car. You actually hear some rain on the
windshield. And you'd wake up at like 4 a.m. to catch the 15-minute ICC breakdown, like ICC highlights of whatever World Cup game had happened. Mm. talked to some journo or other, hope all the lines stayed connected, and, you know, it's just the hard work you do to keep moving forward.
Podcast, just plug and play.
Plug and play, as they say. Just plug, yeah, press play.
Also, yeah, I never...
The fairies get it done.
Yeah, that's...
How's his cast get up?
I haven't made it as a lawyer. I do have a degree, but I thought...
Oh, yeah, can you clarify that?
Where's the... Where are you at? There's the long-term sustainable income.
It's back up.
Where's the career? I thought podcasting. Podcasting's where it's at. That's where it is.
Yeah. Yeah, and books.
Yeah, books, yeah.
Yeah. What do you get per book? 30 cents or something?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, per sale.
Split that up.
Goes so three ways, yeah. A few people, stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, usually it comes out pretty good in the world. It's all the suppliers and stuff.
I haven't eaten since June.
Yeah. Yeah, okay, Bradley. Bradley Shaper writes in, "G'day, Higman, Freud and Ivan Peslov. Just a quick question about a scenario that happened over the weekend and the best way to reply to being alphaed by someone in the lower grade." I'm going to stand a question. "This season, my best mate decided he wanted to come and play cricket at my club, despite never playing the sport before at either an organised or backyard level. I obviously encouraged this, as I'm still well and truly in the I still somehow love cricket stage of my life, and as club president, I'd love any extra player that I can milk subs and bar revenue from throughout the season. To his credit, he's worked hard at training, committed to the club, and started hitting the ball and bowling somewhere near the training wicket. It came around to his first match where he was playing in the D grade as a specialist number 11 batsman, while yours truly was opening the bowling in the ones. Because we were at different venues, I had no idea how he'd performed except for sporadic group chat messages, but could only imagine he got a golden globe and potentially a sympathy bowl where he'd be whacked around the park. Why the fuck does he want to play again? From my own end, I had a decent day, taking 6 for, brackets 4 for 36, and copped the shit call from the umpire, clean bowl trying to bomb their opener, to be dismissed for a duck. With all this, we came home winners by 30-odd runs, but still no word from the fourths. Then, on my drive home, I get a text message through from my mate. G'day, chap, he opens with, knowing it'll fuck me off. How'd you go today? My reflex reaction was to cower as I'd read this opening line too often from my dad. But before I could even answer, he chimed in with another message saying, well, I took more wickets than you made runs today, champ. What the fuck, I thought. This bloke was bowling the ball into the second wicket at training. How's he landed it on the pitch, let alone taking a scalp? Did he really look up our live scores just to alpha me? He then proceeds to tell me he was on a hat-trick after taking 2 wickets in consecutive balls and bowled a couple of good overs while D-grade ran out comfortable victors. Here's my problem. What the fuck should I do in this situation? Should I A, be happy for him, knowing that this joy for the sport is growing and may just be seeking my approval? This then runs the risk him offering me in the future.
Don't know.
B, tell him to fuck off and let him know 2 wickets is fuck all and that shit well and truly gets wickets. Mm-hmm. C, ignore the message and avoid him at training from the safety of the A-grade net. Thoughts? Iggy.
Well, Pezzy, lad. This is who wrote the question? Bradley. Bradley Shaper, who's definitely an American actor.
Bradley Schaefer. It's Ashley Schaefer from Eastbound and Down. That'd be amazing.
Fuck, what a sensation's really got me there. Bradley's come across the scenario where his identity as the cricketer of his group has been challenged.
Exactly.
And he doesn't like it. Now, in the same way that Tim Payne described Ben Stokes' innings at Headingley as just having a day out, that's what his friend here has just had a day out. You know, sure, his two wickets in D grade, that's his day out. How Bradley gets back at him, you know, to ultimately succeed is to encourage him to keep playing.
Yeah.
Because no one ever has 2 or 3 good days in a row. Draw this thing out. Draw this fucker out all through the summer. Can only play next season again, because the more you play the game, the less and less the ratio of good days to days spent becomes further apart from 1-to-1.
Bradman mainly failed.
Fucking Bradman mainly failed.
It's a risky game, though, he goes.
It's a risky game.
Because, as you said, this guy, Bradley Shapers, not to be confused with Ashley Shaper, his identity is rooted in cricket.
And that's right.
He's brought his mate along to milk him.
He wants to milk his friend.
He wants to milk him.
Yeah.
And,
prostate milk him.
He wants to prostate milk his friend. That's why he's brought him to the club. Need a break, man. You never say no in improv.
So, mate, come down to the club Tuesday, Thursday nights. Yeah. What a prostate milk you.
Oh, I mean, I just got him down. Prostate milk. Anyway, join the Patreon. This is pretty much it.
Fuck me.
If that's what you like.
Oh,
that's a gear you like.
Oh, my God.
No. So he's brought him down. Because for the reasons I said, he's brought him down. But what he's discovered is that perhaps his mate, who's not even played the code before, he's just like, yeah, I'll come along for a laugh or whatever.
Yeah.
He starts succeeding. Now, this guy's taking four frame ones. It's probably some shit comp.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Sorry for that disrespect, but it just helps the bit.
Yep.
And what if his mate does the ultimate from a standing start, from not even knowing the game? Let's say, a year?
Yeah.
He's in ones. He's just more athletic than him, and he starts doing better than him. Bradley Shaper is no one after that. He literally is no one.
Yeah.
He's got no identity. He's a ghost. He's got no reason to be among his – he has to reinvent himself. Now, maybe that reinvention will be good for Bradley. So Bradley should have included what his other hobbies are and stuff like
that. Should have
done. Yeah, but he didn't.
Yeah.
He's just a club president whose mate, who'd never played the game, is better than him.
Bradley used to work on a farm. Good with cows.
Got it. He might have to go back to the farm then.
Might have to go back to the farm. Get that bucket. Samuel Burrows writes in, "Hey, boys. Don't want to be that annoying guy who emails every week, but I listened to the latest pod yesterday and couldn't resist." This might be a few weeks old. Apologies, Samuel. Someone messaged in about Biden being a teeth-based democratic selection. Good point made, but has anyone been watching the New Zealand situation the last 3 years? Our PM would undoubtedly be the skipper of any teeth-based selection 11. Look at any election ads if you need proof. Have a great weekend, Sam. Mm,
yeah. Yeah, Jacinda Ardern, absolute queen of...
teeth-based selection?
Of teeth, yeah.
Yeah.
More than Alex Carey or anything.
Yeah. What's now the US presidential election is tomorrow, which is Melbourne Cup Day here in Australia.
Oh,
the
well,
race
apparently,
stops a nation.
Well, apparently Trump's going to be securing or announcing victory before the voting's finished.
Fucking amazing. It's amazing. That's the way you do
amazing
it.
Amazing is one word for it. Yeah, well, yeah. I suspect it's not going to be like over in a day. There's all sorts of people are already.
I'm not fucking leaving.
Yeah.
That's what's going to be done.
But yeah, no, Jacinda Ardern. Wonderful teeth. I feel like teeth-based selections are becoming more and more common.
It's kind of Alex Carey.
Yeah, there just seem to be more people with good teeth around these days.
Yeah,
I've got no data to back that.
Well,
up.
Even people who start in the public eye and then they move into, you know, I'm thinking my Steve Smiths. I'm thinking my Siddles.
Yeah,
I'm thinking my Jurgen Klopps.
I still remember again when we were interviewing Alex Carey, we were asking about others with good teeth because he was sort of trying to deflect from his own teeth. He's like, look, my teeth are good. He's like, but a lot of it's to do with my skin tone. And so the contrast created between my teeth colour and my skin tone is great. So he was just sort of getting a scientific background. But then he said like something really jarring, which is like, Steve Smith has 20 grand in his mouth.
Which coming from Alex Carey.
It was very off-brand for Alex Carey.
Very off-brand.
He's very gentle, kind soul.
Yes.
He's got 20,
nice
grand,
eyes.
20 grand in his mouth.
Cunt's got fucking 20 grand. He didn't say that.
Yeah.
But he meant it.
You know, he's got it in him. Well, I like hearing that. It's like Copeland. I like hearing that my professional cricket at the end of the day
well, you
have a real bullish streak.
Mate, how do you make it in Australian cricket in professional sport without being having a little bit of a on the side?
How are you?
That second head just pops out.
Yeah.
How do you have
he's
that?
He's a keeper.
He's a keeper. He's up the stumps.
Yeah.
Not having a chat.
Josh Inglis breathing down his neck.
Yeah. Yeah, his breath-based selection. Josh Inglis is a breath-based selection. The fuck does
he
that
mean? He
doesn't
even know.
My God.
He's meant to be quite good, Josh Inglis.
Well, he's got 150 in a shield game. He's probably all right.
He's meant to be a good keeper.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sponsored by Colgate.
Is he? Okay. We still going? Yep. Craig Prince. Or do you want to go Barrington?
You choose, mate.
Barrington then.
Okay.
Barrington says, Craig, we'll get to you.
We'll do the Patreon.
A couple of weeks,
we'll put him in the Patreon.
Barrington. Hashtag RTDC. A up, lads. English.
Nice.
Northern English, isn't it?
Yeah.
Getting some real big boy guests on lately with the likes of Sir Kirtley, but there's a man out there who we all want to hear from more than any other, the rarest of the rare. What is it going to take to get YJB on the show? Now, here goes, who's YJB?
Young Johnny Bester.
I reckon you've got it in you to get past the cliched ECB media-trained banalities he usually offers up and give him the platform to feel comfortable sharing. That's a lot of words to ask when you're getting Bester on. He's long overdue. Cheers, boys. Regards, Barrington.
It's a great question, and I'll just say that I'll break the fourth wall here. Pez sorts the guests, and so when he messaged me and says we've got so and so on this week, it's a fucking massive win because we're still nobodies from the internet. We're not pretending to be anyone else. We're just some idiots from the internet who do a thing. And so when someone good comes on, it's fucking amazing. And it's real hard work. Pez, for instance, how many requests did you put in this week from people?
Oh, I don't want to say.
Okay.
Eight. couple of Hail Marys. Let's just say Let's just say.
Yeah, does Marlon
let's
count?
Just say Greg Chappell didn't get back to me too. That's all right, Greg. The offer's still open.
It's too busy looking at Ponting photos. Yeah, it can be hard work to get people on. So it's good when they do come on. But there's some irons in the fire with YJB.
I just say, and thank you for that, he goes, going to say that there is no person in the world that I'm going to go harder for than Johnny Bairstow. I mean, this is a long campaign. We have been given some encouraging signs in the last few months. I've never spoken to Johnny in any way before, so it will probably be quite embarrassing.
He doesn't even follow us in any
platforms. He's probably, who knows? We've been given some encouraging signs. That's all I'll say. And, you know, for all the listeners out there who need to feel like work is being done to get young Johnny Bairstow, let me assure you, I is being dotted. Every lowercase J is being dotted, every T crossed to get young Johnny Bairstow on the show. And I tell you what, you know, we want to do it right when it happens, if and when it happens. And we'll be going the whole hog. We'll be going for not only Bairstow, but Bairstow in the flesh.
The queen.
And Bairstow with hopefully a couple of beers around the table.
Yeah.
For a long period of time.
And
because there's a lot to clear up.
Yeah.
There's a lot to discuss.
Yeah, a lot of DMs are just like,
a lot of Bairstow stories.
Yeah.
Yeah. But only if he's willing, because he just lives his life and he's a really good cricketer and it needs to be good for him. It needs to be fun for him.
Yeah.
But why is he going to subject himself to two idiots from the internet? I'm looking at you. He goes, why would he do that?
He wouldn't do that.
He's got no idea who we are.
Yeah.
So you've got to make it worth his while. Johnny, this is going to be fun and good for you.
It'll be funny.
Yeah. So
fun and funny.
So we're working hard.
So there's more good things to come is what we're trying to say in the future, and we're working towards that. But we're going to take a couple weeks off just to recharge the batteries before the Channel 7 show starts in about 5 weeks, Pez, plus the summer in general starts. The test matches start soon after that. The podcast will be back better than ever. Patreon's going to be running all the way through. We're not taking a break with the Patreon. Summer's around the corner, just a month away.
It's going to be big.
All right. See you guys in a bit.